good to be able to share with you today. I could never have imagined that I'd be recording a sermon to put in a video and be part of an online service, but this is what we've become used to, isn't it? And, you know, we miss coming together. And there's a lot of things we miss about life before the pandemic, isn't there? I wonder what it is that you miss most about the way things used to be. You know, one of the hardest things is physical contact with people. You have to think twice before touching someone now that's not a part of your immediate family. And that's strange, isn't it? It's hard because when you touch somebody, you make a special connection with them. Touching someone can express things that we can't say in words. Think of the power of a hug, a kiss, a squeeze of the hand sometimes, an arm around the shoulder. These things can help us to express so much, and especially when words fail us. And you know, words have failed us so many times during these past few months as we try to get our heads around what's going on. Whatever we want to express, whatever we want to offer, our love, comfort, encouragement, support, appreciation, we'll do it through the power of touch. I was talking to a student today, and when I'm recording this on Thursday, I was talking to a student, and she said to me, it's so strange not to be together on results day and to be able to hug each other, to give a teacher a hug, to say thank you, to give their friends a hug, to show how happy they are, or to give a hug to show their concern for somebody who's disappointed. You know, it's instinctive, isn't it? When we met up with people after lockdown, the first thing we wanted to do was to give them a kiss or you know, just touch them in some way, but we had to just content ourselves with smiling and saying, do you know, I could if I would, and just, this is what I'd like to do. We've been deprived of that physical touch. We have to limit our physical contact with people because we don't want to catch the virus or transmit it to anybody. Now, more than ever, we are aware of the power of touch now that it's limited to us. Now we're more aware of the power of touch to transmit infection. That's hard. We avoid touching certain things in case we pick up the infection ourselves. We're constantly washing and sanitizing our hands. We have to avoid touching most people in case we unknowingly do them harm. Passing on a disease we don't fully understand. So important to keep down the infection levels, but our government has even regulated our behaviour. We never imagined anything like this. But you know, in New Testament times, this was something that was normal, having to regulate who you touch and having your washing regulated. In those times, there wasn't even the understanding of disease and medicine that we have today. And so, like now, there were regulations as to who and what you could touch for fear of spreading sickness through the community. In that society, there was no separation between faith on the one hand and everyday life. They were together, and so the regulations came from the Jewish law, the Old Testament. It's all there in the Old Testament and the teachings of the Jewish faith, what you could and couldn't do. Now, a couple of the top things that you had to avoid doing so you wouldn't become unclean were, one, touching dead bodies, and two, touching a woman who's suffering from internal bleeding. If you did that, you'd have to wash yourself very carefully and then separate yourself from other people. Not go anywhere near them for a whole day until you were no longer considered unclean or impure. But in our gospel reading today, what's Jesus asked to do? First, he's asked to touch a dead body. And then, a woman suffering from bleeding inside touches him. So this is something unprecedented in those times. This is something that Jesus multiplied a small packed lunch of bread and fish, and how he fed more than 5,000 people, until they were all satisfied and could eat no more. And then we looked at how in the dead of night, in the midst of a terrifying storm, Jesus inspires Peter to step out in faith and join him, walking on the choppy waters. And then when Peter's faith fails him, taking his eyes off Jesus, and he starts to panic and sink, Jesus himself reaches out his hand and grabs him, and together they reach safety. So we've seen Jesus, the one who uses the little that we have to satisfy the hungers of people in need, and Jesus who satisfies our own hunger. We've seen Jesus who invites us to step out to meet him in the midst of the storms of life. Jesus who takes us by the hand when we start to feel overwhelmed by those storms and we take our eyes off him. And today we see another sign of Jesus. Jesus who brings his healing power into people's lives. Jesus responding in compassion to two desperate people and responding through the power of touch. So let's look at this reading from Matthew 9. Jesus is in his hometown. He's been preaching and teaching, and his fame as a preacher and a healer is spreading. And suddenly a man rushes up to him in a panic, in utter desperation. Everybody knows this man, everyone in the whole town. He's the ruler of the synagogue. He's like, you know, the Lord Mayor or something. Everyone looks up to him. He's got status and dignity. But his dignity and status mean nothing to him at this time. He's throwing himself at Jesus' feet because his beloved daughter is dead. He's desperate for Jesus' help. He's so desperate that he comes humbly, kneeling before Jesus and begging Jesus to lay hands on his daughter. He firmly believes that Jesus can do the impossible and raise her to life. He has faith in what Jesus can do. Now, Jesus doesn't hesitate. Dead body? No. Doesn't matter. He just responds to the official's faith. He goes with the man, even though it will mean him touching a dead body, something that will make him unclean according to the religion that he follows. But on the way, something else happens. This time, it's a woman. Now, she doesn't come up to Jesus and ask him for what she wants. She wouldn't dare. Women in those days wouldn't boldly approach a man, let alone a holy man. That's just not what women were supposed to do. Women were supposed to know their place. But like the official, she's desperate for help. She's been suffering like this for 12 years, bleeding inside that won't stop. For 12 years, she's not been allowed to touch anybody because of her illness. The other gospel writers spell out how desperate she is. Luke tells us she spent every penny she has on doctors and remedies that don't help. Mark simply says no one could help her. She has nothing left. But there's one thing she does have. She has faith. She has faith in Jesus' power to heal. And while she won't go up to the holy man and she won't go near the official who are hurrying down the street on their urgent mission, she has faith and she wants to get nearer. And so she pushes through the crowds, and as she gets nearer and nearer, she's saying to herself, if only I could just touch the edge of his cloak, I'll be made well. She trusts that something will happen if she can just get near to Jesus. She truly believes that Jesus can make her well. And she did it. She did it. She touches the edge of his cloak. Jesus turns, sees her, but sees her faith too, and commends her. Everything's going to be okay, he says to her. Everything will be okay. Your faith has saved you. And as soon as these words are spoken, the bleeding stops. Of course, it's not her faith alone that has made her well. It's Jesus' power. But without the faith to come near, Jesus wouldn't have been able to do that miracle. Her faith enabled Jesus' touch to make her whole. And just like that, her life is never the same again. She's not only healed from her illness, but she can be part of normal society again. Jesus' healing is complete. Not just freedom from illness, but wholeness, cleanness, completeness. Jesus' touch, activated by her faith, restores her completely, makes her whole, well, pure, clean. Instead of her touch making Jesus unclean, touching him, the touch of Jesus, makes her clean. Well, the woman melts into the background. We don't know what happened to her, but on they go to the synagogue ruler's house, where the mourning for the dead child has already begun. The flutes are playing a mournful tune. Inside, there's weeping and wailing. There's no doubt that the child is dead. And so they laugh at Jesus when he tells them the child's not dead but sleeping. They know a dead body when they see one. Only sleeping? Don't be ridiculous. Jesus takes no notice. He knows what he's come to do. Jesus orders the mourners out of the room and just leaves the child's parents with him, along with a few disciples. The parents watch and wait. Now remember, touching a dead body is a big risk for Jesus. According to the Jewish religion, it will contaminate him. But Jesus looks down at the still body lying on the bed. He bends down. He reaches out his hand and he grasps that cold little hand that belongs to the dead child. "Little girl," he says, "get up." She does. Jesus' saving power is so great that he brings life to the dead. In Jesus, there is life-giving power. In Jesus, there is the power to change the impossible. I wonder who you identify with most today from our gospel reading. Are you like that synagogue ruler begging Jesus to act on behalf of someone you love so dearly you can't bear to lose them? And even when everyone else has given up hope, you don't give up hope. I know there's at least one person who can identify with that because I spoke to her many, many weeks ago. She faced the possibility of losing the one dearest to her through COVID. In the hospital, the doctors saw no hope for him. They gave him up for dead. But she didn't give up. She begged the doctors not to let him die, and she begged Jesus to act on his behalf and lay his healing hands on our brother. We all begged Jesus to lay his healing hands on our brother. Humanly speaking, there was no hope. But the power of Jesus' touch brought him back from the dead. Is there a person that you want Jesus to touch today, to restore them to life, to restore them to something more like the life that they need? Is there a situation that seems hopeless that everyone else gives up on and say, "Oh no, nothing can change"? Can you be like that synagogue ruler and come to Jesus and ask him to lay his healing hands? Or maybe we identify more with that woman, afraid to speak to Jesus about the healing we need. I wonder if there's times when we feel so dirty, so ashamed, so messed up, that we just don't feel able to approach Jesus and ask for his help. We feel we're too unworthy. What do? Do we give up and say to ourselves, "Jesus can't help me. I'm beyond help. I've tried everything. Nothing works. So how can Jesus help me?" Or do we dare to have the kind of faith that that woman showed? We know we're not worthy to approach God. None of us are. she would be healed and saved. But what if our faith is small? What if our strength is weak? We can't all be strong in the faith all of the time. Sometimes our courage fails us. Sometimes we need support from our sisters and brothers. That's where our reading from Ephesians comes in. You see, Paul trusted in God's purposes even though things seemed to be going badly wrong. He knew he could trust God because he'd seen and experienced the power of God working in him and through him. Paul had been put in prison at this time for preaching the good news of Jesus. He could have given up. He could have said his preaching days were over. But he spent his time praying and pondering the loving purposes of God and writing to the believers to encourage them. Paul cared deeply about his brothers and sisters in the faith. He was concerned that these believers might become discouraged, knowing that he was going through so much suffering. And that's why he prays for them, this beautiful and powerful prayer that David read for us from Ephesians 3. Let's think of all the amazing things and recall what Paul prayed for these people. It's a wonderful prayer that we can pray for one another. Paul prays to Almighty God to strengthen his sisters and brothers in their inner being. He prays for them to be deeply rooted and grounded in the love of Jesus that's living within them, Jesus living in them through faith. Paul prays that God will give them power to know deeply the love of Jesus. The love of Jesus in all its enormity, far beyond human knowledge. The way he puts it, the height, the depth, the breadth, all its enormity. The love of Jesus that is greater than anything that we can imagine. And he prays that they would have power to be filled with the fullness of God. Amazing things to ask. Amazing things to imagine that we can have from God. But Paul has the boldness to pray all these things because he has confidence in the God who is able to do far more than any of us can ask or even imagine. The God who's mighty, healing, life-giving, life-changing power is even now at work within us. Ponder these words of Paul's in Ephesians chapter 3. Let them sink deep into our being.